Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas is Paula Faust. Thanks for being with us, Paula.
Thank you.
Hey, Paula, can you start out by telling our listeners how you got involved in animal issues?
Well, I think for many, many years, I became a vegetarian about, I'd say 49 years ago. So wow. Your awareness of human beings leads to your awareness of the animal kingdom and how wonderful they are. And I had a dear friend who had kind of a private zoo. She and her husband were the ones who had the animals for all the movies and TV shows in Hollywood. And I think she probably influenced me as well. Tony Ringo, Tony Law was her, Tony Helfer. She had, you know, several last names, but I think that was probably a pretty strong influence on me when I got to have her chimpanzee's arm be around my shoulders and things like that. It was fun.
Can't say I've had that.
Yeah, me neither. That sounds like an awesome experience. And then how did that lead to the film?
Well, what happened was about 22 years ago or so, I was staying on the Big Island in Hawaii. And we used to go across the street to a beautiful bay every morning and go snorkeling there with the fish. And it was just fantastic. There were scores and scores. There were schools of fish and great big tortoises who'd be, you know, swimming right around you and right with you. And it even seemed like they were very friendly. So fast forward about 20 years later, and I was in Hawaii and we went to Maui. We went snorkeling at two or three locations on Maui. And then we went back over to the Big Island and went snorkeling in the very bay where I had been 2 decades previously. And there was virtually no fish at all. I mean, there were a couple fish in all of these locations where before there were just so many. They were so plentiful and they were so colorful. And they really made a strong impression on you, you know, to be in that world underwater with them. So I went into the snorkeling store to drop off my gear. It turned out it was a Snorkel Bob store. And I said to the people working there, I said, where are all the fish? And they said, that's exactly what our boss keeps talking about. And he's written several books about this. There's a shelf over there. Go and have a look. So I went over. I started pulling down these large volumes of photographic books that he's written and done the underwater photography for. They were just tremendous. And I came to find out about collection for the aquarium trade. I had no idea about it before. Like most people, like go around the world or wherever you were, if you'd see a fantastic aquarium, you'd just be in awe of the gorgeous fish in there. And then I came to know how the fish were actually collected and how much trauma they're put through. So that's how I ended up making the film.
Hey, Paula, was that Hanama Bay?
It wasn't. No, this was just a small place on the Big Island.
Yeah, because I also have been snorkeling in Hawaii quite a few times and also noticed over the years a decline in the fish and also in the Virgin Islands. It's not like it's just happening in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like, so this is, I mean, as I learned in the film, The Dark Hobby, this is really a much bigger operation than I had any idea about how many animals are we talking every year who are impacted by this trade in aquatic wildlife?
Millions. Statistic is something like 20 million a year, 23 million a year.
That's incredible. And then if you're thinking every year, because, you know, obviously many of these fish there, and maybe we can talk about first, maybe what are the methods that people use to go in and collect these fish that are living in the reefs and in different parts around Hawaii?
Well, in Hawaii, they go down and they collect them with nets. But in other parts of the world, they actually use cyanide to stun the fish. They swim down, they spray cyanide all over, all in the water. It kills the reef. It stuns the fish. They float to the top. Some of them die. And the ones who don't die are collected. And then when they're shipped abroad, they're jaundiced. Their eyes are yellow, as if you had hepatitis. And then another thing they do in other areas of the world, such as the Philippines or Thailand or Indonesia, is they throw dynamite onto the reef to make the fish leave the coral. And it breaks the coral. It kills the coral. It destroys the habitat. And of course, again, you kill a lot of wildlife that way. But in Hawaii, those two methods are not allowed. In Hawaii, they go down and they catch them with nets.
Yeah. Well, that's incredibly sad that it's that in other places that they are even allowed legally to use cyanide or, you know, dynamite to, you know, get the fish out, because obviously these are, I mean, the corals are obviously resilient, but they can only withstand so much. And I think as we get to see in your film is that they're just completely decimated. And then without those places for the fish to live and thrive, the species are obviously going to be at a much greater deficit in trying to survive, you know, in the ocean.
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, there's a lot of movements around the world to pass legislation. There's pledges to sign, there's petitions, and there's an organization in the United States called the Sea Save Foundation, and they're working very hard to pass legislation to stop the cyanide fishing that goes on. However, what happens in Hawaii is that once these fish are caught and they want to get them to market as soon as possible, they will pierce their swim bladders with a needle. Yeah.
That sounds terrible.
It is terrible. Yeah. And they'll trim off, they'll take scissors and they'll trim off parts of their fins so that they don't poke the plastic bag and destroy, you know, the way of transporting them, because they're going to go by air to the mainland. And also they're starved. They're starved so that they don't foul the water that they're in. By the time they reach the mainland, about the statistic is something like 90% of them die within a year of capture. And then they always have to be replaced.
The thing is, when they're puncturing the swim bladder and, you know, chopping off parts of the fin, they're just opening up the poor fish for infections too. I mean, not only is, I'm sure, is it painful and very destructive in the fish's ability to regulate itself in the water column, but just think of the bacterial infections that would come from that kind of open wound.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really, really traumatic for the animals.
And it's you know, it's got to be, and as when you're talking about the numbers that you're talking about, 23 to 20 plus 27 million fish every year, you know, completely unsustainable for the population to be able to try and keep up with that. And then on top of that, you're taking these fish who eat the algae, right, on the reefs that allow them to survive. And as you're taking these fish out over and over and over again, the algae, you know, will continue to grow and overload the reefs. And you know, and then it's causing a, you know, an issue with providing oxygen in the ocean as well. And it's, you know, beyond just the animals that are impacted, but the reefs themselves.
Yeah, that's correct. It actually is hurting the reef in many ways, because when you remove certain species from the reef, and there are certain species that aquarium hobbyists love, and those, you know, those the collectors want to sell them. So you're going in and you're removing certain species and you're upsetting the entire hierarchy, because there is a perfect balance of food. Not only those eating the algae who are herbivores, but also various fish that are eating each other. And so you're destroying the reef in many ways.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, I guess I was naive. I thought, and not that it makes better, much better ethically, but, you know, I thought that many of the fish that they sell now are, you know, sort of produced in aquaculture in, you know, a separate setting and not taken directly from the ocean, but it's really not quite that.
Yeah, there's not so many yet. They are striving to be able to breed more, you know, in a captive manner. That's going on, but they're not there yet.
I was just going to say that, you know, in Hawaii, they have had a long history of trying to protect marine animals. And it was a really interesting thing I found in the film, the dynamic between the native Hawaiians and, you know, the trade people and the regulators, and how it seems like it's been a really rough road to get the protections that are in place, but there's still quite a long way to go. Can you talk a little bit more about how, you know, cultural issues come into play with also with harvesting these animals from the sea?
Oh, absolutely. We were very lucky, because when we made the film, we got to know several of the local people there who've been working very, very hard on the issue. So Willie Kaupiko, he's the mayor of Mililihi, which is the last fishing village in Hawaii on the Big Island. and his son, Kaimi Kaupiko, who's a teacher there, and he teaches cultural ways, because there is quite a big movement in Hawaii to save their language and to save their culture and to keep it alive and all their beliefs. And they, and some of them call what they're doing, they call themselves cultural practitioners. So Kaimi, he's actually teaching a lot of the ancient ways to the young kids, the ways of fishing, and all of the fishing has been done through centuries in a manner of sustaining everything, you know, just done in balance, not taking fish at the time that they are laying their eggs. You know, it's all according to, some of it at least, is according to the lunar calendar. And, you know, there's a whole lot that's involved in it. And they're trying to keep that alive. And what we came to know from them, and Willie and Kaimi, they were both plaintiffs in the many, many cases and lawsuits that have been being fought there. It's over 11 or 12 years that this group of conservation heroes, is how I like to refer to them, they've all been working together on many, many issues trying to protect reef wildlife. And besides Kaimi and Willie, we got to know Kimakeo Kapalehuahua, who is known as a great elder there. And he speaks in the Dark Hobby film to how the ancient ways are so tied in for the Hawaiian people to the ocean, to the land, and how you are supposed to treat it. You know, we as human beings have a certain place in the cosmos, just as all of nature does. So it was really fantastic for us that we got these kind of people, were able to participate in the film and bring that to light and really communicate to people like us, you know, who perhaps are born on the mainland and aren't familiar. But it's a very ancient and great respectful culture that is totally immersed in how important nature is, and keeping the balance is very important to them.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, the additional challenge that, you know, in creating this film and just this issue in general is that you don't, you know, unlike the degradation, environmental degradation that we can see on land, you know, the sea is just this, you know, this whole other beast that we just don't fully understand. We don't see on a regular basis. And you're relying on these, you know, government entities and the cultures and the locals to protect these beautiful places. But it can be so hard to do it because we're just not in them and we can't see the degradation happening as quickly as it would above land. And it, you know, sort of makes it an additional challenge, I think, for people to understand it, which I think is great about the film, is it really, you know, the cinematography is beautiful, the music's beautiful, the marine wildlife is beautiful, the many of the phrases that are used by the local cultures are just beautiful. And so I think I think it's been great. It was great for me to see that up close, because, you know, here we are in the desert and it's just a whole other world. But I think you all did a great job of bringing these issues to light. And also, you know, I think, you know, part of the film was obviously identifies a lot of the challenges, but there has been some positive developments, right? I think they established a monument over different parts of Hawaii. Is that what happened?
Yes. When we think of Hawaii, we're only thinking of certain islands, which are down in one tip. But then to the north, there's many, many islands that really are the Hawaiian Islands as well. And they have been declared a national monument. And it was the largest marine preserve in the world. And they have been now, you know, overtaken by another one. I'm not sure about that. But, I mean, it's just enormous. And apparently, there's many species there that don't exist anywhere else. So the scientists are really excited about studying all the species there, and everything's intact. And it's Papa Hanau Mokuakea. And two of the people in the film, which is Gail Grabowski and Jessica Woolley, they both sit on the board of the Marine Preserve. And so they could really speak to how important it is that that's being all kept intact there.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I think it's interesting. So the goal now is really to get these protections throughout the rest of Hawaii, right? Because I think someone in the film had said that you can sell rocks, or you can't sell rocks or sand or coral or, you know, all these various things from Hawaii, but selling the fish is okay. And so is that the next step, is trying to get you know, local government protection, support for this?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, as of right now, it is illegal to collect these reef wildlife because, again, the circuit court has upheld the Supreme Court's decision. So it is illegal. But the problem is that there's no enforcement. And particularly, I mean, every, you know, most of the states in the United States have financial, you know, stretching they have to do all the time anyway. And then you put COVID on top of that. So it's very hard to have enforcement when you don't have the budget for it.
Right, right. And yet the state, you know, I'm sure makes, I'm not even sure the figure, but, you know, likely billions of dollars and ecotourism. So it would be, you know, you think it would be in the best interest of local leaders thinking about the long-term success of the community and the people there that they would account for that, because that's, you know, that's an ongoing industry. Whereas, you know, you're going to take these fish out of the wild and decimate the populations. And all of a sudden, you know, that's gone. You know, it takes a long time. And in some type of cases, you can't ever replace that and bring back what once was there. So it's a shame that, you know, I think the governor had vetoed a bill that you talk about in the film. And it's just so sad that the industry won out despite what the community really wanted. And you see that they're not representing the people there, but, you know, trying to represent the industry.
Yes, that's very true. And what's happened is that as the film, The Dark Hobby, has come out, we already have almost 60 partner organizations. And if you go to thedarkhobby.com, you can see the logos of all of these ocean, reef, and wildlife organizations who are partnering with us to get the word out, because it is not just in Hawaii, but it's a global situation where the reefs are under duress and reef wildlife is really, you know, in trouble. So we're really excited that we're going to be able to work with so many people going forward in many, many places in the world. I mean, some of them are in Kenya, you know, some of them they're all over. I mean, they're in the UK, they're in Japan, they're everywhere. So we're glad that this is something that we can share the work of getting the word out.
It's a great project. And, you know, any city you go to, there's just so many of these saltwater aquarium stores. Here in El Paso, we have a number of them, and they're getting shipments twice a week. And as you said, with every shipment, you know, individuals arrive dead and in poor health. And, you know, it's just, we don't have that much time to keep taking all of these 20 million living animals out of the sea every year. So it's really encouraging that so many people are getting on board and getting the message that this is something that has to stop.
Yeah. And what's really exciting right now is that science and technology is giving us such a window into these creatures. And we're finding out that fish have feelings. You know, they feel pain, they communicate with each other, they make noises, they actually sing. We have in the film, The Dark Hobby, we have sounds of the fish singing, which were captured by scientists in Perth, Australia. And it's just fantastic to realize the intelligence of these creatures. They recognize human faces. They get together and they make plans. Let's go fish together. You get over there and distract this guy, and I'm going to swim behind him. And, you know, it's just really, like, when you think about it, you know, it's kind of like your dog and your cat. So how come they're not getting the respect that these other creatures are getting?
Yeah, it's true. And I think, you know, we sort of think of fish as very simple creatures, and that's definitely not the case. And if you think about, you know, the millions of years of evolution and what has gone into creating these vibrant communities and ecosystems, it's almost, you know, it's silly that we do think of it that way. But I think for many of us, it's just getting that exposure, you know, to these complex relationships that the animals have. And I think your film definitely does a great job of that.
And there's so much more coming out. You know, we found out as we were making the film, and science keeps progressing in science anymore, and nor would we want to, but the cleaner wrasse, that they can actually recognize themselves. You know, they have self-recognition. They look in the mirror and they pass the mirror test. So they say, that's me over there in the mirror. And so, quite exciting. You know, Who knows what we're going to know in another 5 years about fish?
Yeah, and they use tools. They have such a diversity of behaviors with parental care. You know, they have species where the male take care of the young and species where the female take care of the young. I mean, the fish are just incredibly diverse. They're the most diverse group of vertebrates, and they exhibit the most diverse behaviors of all. So yeah, they're really incredibly interesting and fascinating creatures. And I completely agree that it'd be great if we could highlight that to the public, so through things like your film, so that people will think twice before they buy fish for a home aquarium.
And there's certainly great ways to do that, right? I mean, the technology is advanced so much now, where there's like reef cams and a wide variety of different technology that's being used, that you don't have to go and stick one in a tank in your house. You can actually get even more of a beautiful, meaningful experience with the animals by, you know, even just logging online and looking at it on your smart TV or on your laptop.
But everyone goes to our website, thedarkhobby.com, and signs a pledge there not to buy reef wildlife. Because we just need to spread the word. And if we get a lot of signatures, we can, you know, push legislation with it.
Yeah, that's great. And Paula, speaking of, where can our listeners go to watch the film, The Dark Hobby?
Yes, absolutely. The Dark Hobby is streaming now on Vimeo, iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, and Vudu. So far it's already on 5 or 6 platforms.
We've been talking with Paula Faust, producer, director, and writer, and most recent film is The Dark Hobby. Thanks so much for being with us on the show, Paula.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Paula. Keep up the good work.